We see firsthand the opportunity that the availability of healthcare has on improving the productivity of Alaskans' lives.
Walker administration officials discuss Medicaid expansion at a DC meeting. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Nanilchik student is in custody after threatening his school.
A 12-year-old male student had repeatedly made threatening statements and mentioning that he was going to bring a gun to school.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker stood with the governors of Colorado and Ohio at the National Press Club this morning to announce a new blueprint for healthcare policy. The governor's blueprint is a broad statement of the principles, and they're prodding Congress to get a move on. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
It might seem like the healthcare debate disappeared into the Washington night sometime last year. After Republican bills to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act died, there was an effort to keep and fix by restoring insurance subsidies and shoring up the markets. It fizzled in the Senate. Ohio Republican Governor John Kasich says that's a shame.
And they can't seem to get this done. And it's all politics. It's all, you know, Obama this and Obama that. Well, you know what? That system needs changed.
Bipartisanship is a key element in this blueprint. Kasich is a Republican. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper is a Democrat. Walker, an independent. So far, two other governors have also signed on, from Pennsylvania and Nevada, a Democrat and a Republican. Walker says party lines shouldn't apply to health care policy.
The pendulum swinging back and forth between the administrations on health care, that's what's got to stop. Because the ones that get hurt in that swing of the pendulum are those that need health care and need coverage.
The blueprint calls for market stability, innovation, and competition. Another word that comes up a lot is flexibility. Offstage, Walker said that's a big one.
But I don't know what it is you want the flexibility to
we
do.
We want the flexibility to make sure the health care is provided at a lower cost to Alaskans with higher value. That's
how do you do that?
Well, you sit down and you negotiate. You sit down to the market share and you negotiate with the medical providers. You sit down with the carriers. You sit down on a national level. You sit down with Governor Kasich and Governor.
The governor had another appointment to get to. He's in Washington for the winter meeting of the National Governors Association. He referred detailed questions to his insurance director, Lori Wing-Hyer, and Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson. Wing-Hyer says one option the governor is considering is to allow other Alaska groups to join forces with the state-funded insurance plans to negotiate better prices.
It would allow us to pool state employees with other populations, and the small group market might be one that we look at.
An idea on the rise in some states is imposing work requirements on people who receive Medicaid. Alaska Senate President Pete Kelly of Fairbanks has sponsored a bill to do that. Commissioner Davidson says most Alaskans who are covered by Medicaid live in households with at least one working member already. And every week, Davidson says, the governor hears from people who say enrolling in Medicaid allowed them to get treatment for debilitating problems and get back to work.
And they were looking at not being able to ever work in their lives again. You know, we see firsthand the opportunity that the availability of health care has on improving the productivity of Alaskans' lives.
The state's Medicaid rolls grew last year by about 26,000, and about 40% were children. Wing-Hyer and Davidson say it's due to Alaska's poor economy. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Three are dead after a fire burned a home early today in Anchorage's Fairview neighborhood. Several people called 911 a little before 1:30 a.m. reporting the blaze. Anchorage Fire Marshal Cleo Hill says the townhouse was engulfed in flames when firefighters arrived.
Unfortunately, during the fire investigation, we found three victims who had perished in the fire. It was a parent and two children.
The victims have not yet been publicly identified. Hill says fire investigators are still combing through the home, and she was unable to say what caused the fire. But Hill noted that early indications are the fire was accidental and foul play is not suspected. The legislature is faced with the same dilemma it's had for the past 3 years. How to pay for the state budget when oil and gas revenue can no longer cover the costs. The biggest focus is on a plan that would draw from Alaska Permanent Fund earnings. Alaska Public Media's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The House and Senate both passed versions of a bill to draw from permanent fund earnings last year. While they didn't iron out their differences, rising oil prices and production have closed the gap between what the state spends and what it brings in. But both chambers have taken positions that will make it difficult to pass a combined plan this year. The Senate majority wants a permanent fund draw and would then wait to see if more changes will be needed in the future. The House wants a plan to balance the budget in the next couple of years, even if it takes a new tax on income or higher taxes on oil and gas production. Here's Homer Republican Representative Paul Seaton, a member of the mostly Democratic House majority.
We need more revenue. I mean, we need to balance our income and our expenses.
Seaton is concerned that permanent fund dividends will shrink further without a broad-based tax like a tax on income, as well as higher oil and gas taxes.
For people to have any security that there is a permanent fund dividend, when you start taking money out of the earnings reserve of the permanent fund, they need some security in that and knowing what that's going to be.
Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki says the House majority has concentrated on the potential downsides of budget projections in order to argue for new taxes. He says the Senate is more optimistic.
We do not want to overcapitalize with taxes today. There's a very good chance we're not going to need them. And had we passed one 3 or 4 years ago, we would likely be overcapitalized today by a sum greater than a couple of $100 million.
Michicki says the two chambers should agree on where they have common ground, that is, drawing money from permanent fund earnings.
If you look at what we want to do on discipline regarding the growth of the cost of this government at inflation or lower into the future, the reality of it is the fund grows much faster, and within a relatively short time in perpetuity, you would never have the need of a broad-based tax in the state of Alaska. I think that's a worthwhile goal.
One factor that could keep the two sides apart is the challenge in defining exactly what the size of the deficit is. Legislative Finance Division Director David Teal is a nonpartisan expert on the budget. He says Governor Walker proposed a budget with a gap of $672 million between spending and oil royalties and taxes if the legislature passed a permanent fund earnings draw. Michicki says there are a few factors that would drive the number down, including rising oil royalties. Teal says it would benefit the legislature to agree on the scope of the budget hole they're trying to close.
You want to avoid the situation that we had years ago when the House had a revenue forecast, the Senate had a revenue forecast, and the governor had a revenue forecast. And when you're in that situation and the Constitution requires a balanced budget, what are you balancing to?
The House and Senate haven't agreed on how much money they need to raise. In addition, they have different ideas on how large permanent fund dividends should be. The House has proposed $1,250, while the Senate proposed $1,000. And there are also differences on how large of a draw the permanent fund earnings can sustain. Teal says agreeing on goals can help frame the discussion.
Until people can agree on a set of outcomes that are acceptable to them, you're going to have people differing on their opinion of whether an action fixes the problem.
And looming over all of this is an election that will determine the governor, half of the 20 senators, and all 40 House members. Lawmakers acknowledge that without a plan this year, the legislature could make an unplanned draw on fund earnings to close the budget gap. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka High Schoolers stretch their creative muscles in a statewide competition.
T-ball is my favorite sport because everybody gets to go out there and hit the ball and play in the dirt. So DDF is kind of like that. You know, everybody gets a chance to do a thing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Family Education Loan so parents, a spouse, or grandparents can help students with the cost of college or training programs in or outside of Alaska. Interest rates are lower than the Federal Plus, and no credit is required. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
A student from Nanilchik School was taken into custody after making threats about bringing a gun to school. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Tim Despain says troopers received a call from a concerned parent on Tuesday about the student.
Troopers from the Anchor Point and Soldotna posts responded and conducted an investigation that showed that a 12-year-old male student had repeatedly made threatening statements about the school and mentioning that he was going to bring a gun to school. He did make these statements to some other students.
After consulting with the State Division of Juvenile Justice, troopers took the student into custody off school grounds and transported him to the Kenai Youth Facility. Kenai Peninsula Borough School District spokesperson Peggy Aaron Neff says the school's principal, Jeff Ambroser, was notified about the threat after school hours.
So he sent home a message to all the parents, and the staff was fully briefed as well. And then a counselor was available the next day at school for any of the students who wanted to talk about just school safety or their school culture and what was happening in their own school that day.
Troopers are still investigating the incident, and Erkenef adds the district will determine next steps after the investigation is complete.
The process is first law enforcement goes through their investigation, and then after that's all complete, depending on what the outcome of that is, the school will definitely be doing its own investigation and then determining any disciplinary actions based on what comes out and what we discover in the investigation.
The Division of Juvenile Justice was unable to say whether the student is still in custody. A Fairbanks-based tanker truck spilled an estimated 2,500 gallons of diesel fuel Thursday night after the driver lost control and wrecked the rig along an icy stretch of the Richardson Highway just north of Valdez. The double tanker truck rollover occurred at about 9 p.m. Thursday, about 2.5 miles north of Valdez, according to a release issued this morning by the State Department of Environmental Conservation. Information on the condition of the driver was unavailable this afternoon. The wrecked tank leaked diesel onto frozen ground directly east of the Robe River, but responders said the fuel appeared to be flowing away from the river. About 7,200 gallons of diesel was removed from the tank and a smaller pup tank that was being towed behind. A DEC investigation into the wreck continues. Senator Lisa Murkowski today released a letter she sent to five oil company leaders saying she's concerned about the steady decrease in Alaska hire in the oil industry. Murkowski cited a recently released Alaska Department of Labor report stating the share of out-of-state workers in the oil industry rose to 37% in 2016. That's compared to a low of 28% in 2009. As the senator does every year, Murkowski asked for data on how many Alaskan residents the companies employ, including contractors and subcontractors. In response to a request for comment, four of the companies sent data on how many Alaskans they employ. BP, Conoco, Hillcorp, and Alyeska all reported that more than three-quarters of their employees are Alaskan. Alyeska reported the highest percentage of in-state hire at 95%. A spokesperson from Exxon was unable to provide comment, but Exxon's website states its Alaska hire is roughly 85%. The 2018 Iron Dog Snow Machine Race is heading into its final stretch. Fresh snowfall, a windblown trail, and a last-minute change in the rules have created some extra drama as teams move toward the Fairbanks finish line. KIYU's Tim Bodoni reports from the Iron Dog Trail in Galena.
It was an early wake-up call for the Iron Dog frontrunners in Nome, with the leading team of Chris Olds and Mike Morgan sent back on the trail at 4 a.m. Friday. Iron Dog race officials arranged the pre-dawn launch times to make up for the 30-hour weather hold that stopped the action in Unalakleet on Tuesday and to get the finishers into Fairbanks on Saturday as originally planned. Officials also loosened rules on where teams have to take blocks of rest time on the way to Fairbanks and canceled a mandatory hold in Tanana, which is usually required to assure a daylight finish in Fairbanks on Saturday afternoon. That set up the potential for racers to travel almost 700 miles from Nome to Manly Hot Springs before taking a break. Team 8's Tyler Acklestad says he considered it, but ultimately chose to pull over in Galena Friday afternoon.
We hear there's not much of a trail from Ruby on, so in our spot, we're not going to do trail breaking for anybody else. I'm not in the front. I don't have to, so.
The 120-mile desolate stretch from Ruby to Tanana is often the make-or-break portion of the Iron Dog Trail, and it was an incident at an unofficial fueling stop halfway between the villages that led to Team 8's controversial disqualification last year. This year, engine problems knocked Team 8 out of the lead on the way to Nome, opening a door for the likes of Team 6's Robbie Shackle and Brad George to contend for their first Iron Dog win. George says he could have caught up to leaders Olds and Morgan if he only could have scrounged some extra drive belts.
We were 6 minutes behind him in Caltag, and we lost time there looking, trying to buy belts off locals. And then we lost 2 minutes coming down the river. So hopefully we can make time back up here in a little bit and then maybe make the pass going Ruby Tanana.
The winning team gets $60,000 plus additional prizes from race sponsors and the major snow machine manufacturers. The stormy conditions that hampered the first portion of the race have passed, and the front runners are expected to encounter sub-zero temperatures for the first time in the race as they head deeper into the interior. From Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Northwest Arctic Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting February 28th and March 1st, starting at 9 a.m. at the Northwest Arctic Borough Assembly Chambers in Kotzebue. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, talking the talk. While the Olympics come to a close in Pyeongchang this weekend, another competition is underway at East Anchorage High School. That's where over 100 students and their coaches have gathered for the state's annual Drama, Debate, and Forensics Championship. DDF is an after-school activity grounded in public speaking, and Sitka has two teams representing. Despite the many rules, KCAW's Emily Kwong found that the program offers kids an unusual amount of freedom.
It's crunch time before the state DDF competition. And in a classroom at Sitka High School, DDF coach Christian Litton is laying down masking tape on the carpet in a square.
Joe's too active, and so we gotta bring it in a little bit.
His student, Joe Pate, rolls out the cricks in his neck, preparing to practice his HI. That stands for humorous interpretation. And the DDF judges will be looking for Pate to keep his performance inside of a 3-foot by 3-foot area, portraying 4 characters in 10 minutes. This is the moment his teacher character hands back the results from her pop quiz to 3 terrified students. Again, all played by Pate.
Oh, you failed. You failed. You failed. Guys, Morgan failed. Look at that big fat F dance party. Wait, I failed? I give up.
Pate doesn't stay quite within the masking tape box, but he does hit all the bells and whistles of what it's like to be a high schooler. To be the teacher's pet, the class clown, the loner. He's been polishing this piece for months.
It was hard finding a piece that really fit me as an actor, because I would say I have a lot of variety with what I can act with. Like, I'm absolutely terrible at doing a British accent.
I wasn't quite convinced, so ask for proof.
Tea and crumpets, you know. Hello, governor.
Those are his teammates in the background. They're a diverse group of 15, some with a knack for research and debate, others with a flair for the dramatic arts. As a coach, Litton's job is to match a student's unique strengths with one of 16 events. Unlike a sport or a particular school subject, there are so many ways to be good at DDF. Litton says that's what drew him to this after-school activity in the first place.
When I was a high schooler, I was a kid that was not really into the academics of things. I wasn't into school, really. I was acting out, which is a funny term to use, but I needed to find some way to do that in a healthy environment.
Litton says the ability to explore his emotions within the safety of a character got him through high school. When the coaching job opened up in 2016, he applied. Just across the bridge is Alaska's only state-run boarding school. And 3 students on Mount Edgecombe's DDF team are pretending to be Ghostbusters in the style of Shakespeare.
Be you serious, this catching of ghosts?
Aye, still serious.
From thenceforth, we shall be known as...
The Ministers of Grace.
Coach Marcy Drake chuckles, jotting down notes as her 3 Elizabethan Ghostbusters aim pretend proton packs.
Zoom.
Mount Edgecombe's team this year is smaller than Sika High's, with 6 students instead of 15. Drake says her focus is less about winning awards and more about encouraging students to do their personal best.
T-ball is my favorite sport because everybody gets to go out there and hit the ball and play in the dirt. So DDF is kind of like that. You know, everybody gets a chance to do a thing. I was thinking about that, you know, just in light of this latest school shooting, and there isn't one solution to it, but we all have to do what we can do. And this is what I can do.
In 2017, Drake was chosen as DDF Coach of the Year. And she's pretty humble about it. An hour after getting her plaque, she tells me, she was helping a student who had thrown up in her hotel room. While sitting in a circle with her students as they pass around a box of Tutti Frutti cereal, I ask why she won Coach of the Year. Frida Nicarai and Esther Burdick put it this way.
If you have a mountain in front of you and you're trying to get to the other side, I think she should just be one of those people that hold out her hand and help you every step of the way.
Yeah. Or even she'll help you until you don't need it anymore, where then you can climb the mountain on your own.
This week, both Sika High and Mount Edgecombe boarded a plane bound for the state competition, taking their debate notes and orations, but also their coaches, who will be there if they win, if they puke, and as they do, their very best. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Aaron Bell in Anchorage. Bell is the owner of Rethink Home, a used furniture store.
I went back to Ohio a few years ago to clean out my grandfather's house, who was a semi-hoarder. It was just really interesting to go through all of his belongings and see how wonderfully made these older items were. It seems like nowadays a lot of the decor, a lot of the furniture is disposable furniture that's meant to last a few years, whereas a lot of the furniture that I see in the store now and that I had seen at his house may be 100 years old, but it's still in great shape because it was built to last. Anchorage is a very transient community, so people move in and out of state and can't always take their furniture with them, even if it was just purchased a couple years ago. So we have a lot of really nice used furnishings and a lot of fun vintage decor. It's a very eclectic shop, I guess, is the way to describe it. There's just always something new coming in every single day, and it's just amazing to see what people in this town have in their homes or in their storage units that they are cleaning out. You know, the whole point of Rethink Home is to rethink what is beautiful. Just because it's used does not mean that it's not beautiful.
Aaron Bell lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong, Victoria Peterson, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Casey Grove and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Aaron Bolton in Homer, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Tim Bodoni in Galena. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Join Alaska Public Media TV every week for Think Wednesday, featuring a dynamic lineup of programs exploring the thrilling world of nature, technology, and science. Think Wednesday explores the mysteries of our world and our universe, bringing the most exciting and inspiring stories that provide the answers that curious minds crave. Think Wednesday, every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.